and welcome to Drinking Well, a podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd with me, Barbara Drew. We're delighted to be recording our Christmas specials right here in our home in historic St. James's. As a wine merchant, one of the questions we get asked most often is, what shall I serve at Christmas? So for this week's episode, we sit down with account manager Amy Johnson and head of commercial management Martin Rolfe to discuss the red and white wines you should be opening this Christmas. Amy, Martin, welcome to Drinking Well, and thank you for taking the time to sit down with me today. Now, Amy, this is your first time on the podcast.
It is.
Welcome. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey in the wine trade so far?
Yes. So I joined Berry's only in the spring of this year. So I think that's 7 months now, which is quite astounding, really. It's gone very, very quickly. But originally, I come from a hospitality background, working in restaurants, fine dining, around this area, actually, here in St. James's. And then I went into events from hospitality. And, you know, in this area, the restaurant scene's absolutely sensational. And wine was something that sparked interest for me, because wine's something that's been in my family. My grandparents were big collectors of wine, so they really enjoyed it. So growing up, I've had wine at the dinner table and things like that when I was quite young. So moving to Berry Brothers was the right move for me, because it meant I got to, you know, work with amazing people, work with wine, do some traveling, you know, all that has happened pretty much in the last 7 months. So it's been amazing. But yeah, wine is something that's a real passion of mine.
Fantastic. And you mentioned wine around the dinner table growing up. Were there any particular special Christmas wine traditions you had in your family?
Yes, definitely. I think Burgundy was definitely something that it always made an appearance at most occasions, actually. But actually, my family were huge lovers of Bordeaux. So things like Chateau Giscourt was something that they brought out at Christmas. You know, not necessarily kind of first growths in my family, but that was something that, yeah, really, it was something growing up was a household kind of name for us at Christmas, which is lovely.
Wow, what a treat. And Martin, you've been here before. We've had you on the podcast in season one talking about Burgundy, but today you get to stretch your wings and talk about some other regions as well. Apart from Burgundy, is there a particular region that you're passionate about?
I've been in the wine trade for 20 odd years now, at Berry's for 11 of those. I guess the advantage of that is I've been very, very lucky to do lots of travelling, you know, learnt a lot about massive variety of regions. Aside from Burgundy, obviously Claret is something that we have huge exposure to within Berry. So I've been lucky enough to go to Bordeaux maybe sort of 10 times, I guess, for all the on-premier seasons. But I really, really enjoy Tuscan reds, so Sangiovese blends. I love Rioja. It's always been a real sort of passion of mine, and something I always tell customers is a fantastic place to look for big bottles, be that magnums or double magnums or even bigger if you've got a big party. I love Riesling. I love Chardonnay, be that from Burgundy, be that from California. What hopefully we encourage a lot of our customers to end up with, which is a real sort of eclectic cellar with lots of flavours, lots of styles, different things for different occasions.
Brilliant. So lots of ground to cover today then.
Absolutely.
So let's get into it and have a chat about the white wines that we should or could be drinking at Christmas. So there are lots of classics that people go for, but perhaps some more unusual styles as well. Amy, let's start with you. Are there any particular regions that you tend to head to when thinking about Christmas white wines?
I think Christmas is a time to really be quite playful and maybe go sort of out of the ordinary. It's a really special time. You've got lots of friends kind of coming over, family, bringing out things that you wouldn't normally have. For me, that's quite important. I think this year I might be looking at something like a Riesling from Germany, just because I think they can be really refreshing and sort of zingy, and that's quite fun, particularly in the winter. I'm vegetarian, so my palate's kind of quite funky. There's lots going on, lots of big flavors. So having something that can kind of stand up to that is quite important. Big, bold flavours and a lot of sort of florality that I think you get with Riesling is lovely. And equally, if you're having sort of seafood, you know, oysters before Christmas, it's Christmas after all, so your kind of oysters and things like that, I think they'll be really, really lovely.
I think some customers are still under the sort of view that Rieslings are often going to be sweeter as well, or sort of medium. I think it's a really important point that a lot of German and Alsatian Rieslings are lovely and dry. So you have that lovely, real refreshing acidity bone dry, mineral, sort of lemon, limey hints, fantastic with seafood.
Yeah.
And certainly within the private client team at Berry's, it really is trying to sort of get that message across to customers that the wines that perhaps, the reasons that perhaps customers have sort of moved away from, having been sort of still coloured by the 70s and 80s, actually a lot of them are bone dry and absolutely worth another look.
What else would you be looking for at this time of year, Martin?
Burgundy is obviously the one that a lot of us will fall back to. I probably will as well. If I quickly look a little bit more wider away from that, I think the white wines of the Rhone, somewhere I often look. So there we're talking about wines which are generally going to be Roussanne-Marsanne blends. They're going to have the same sort of weight and texture as Chardonnay. So sort of they carry food well, but they have a different flavour profile. Often they'll be a little bit more sort of honeyed, a bit more sort of baked apple. I think that pricing wise, they're really attractive as well, particularly, you know, you can pick up some real bargains on the broking exchange with, you know, anything up to 3, 4, 5 years worth of age on them. So yeah, sort of white Rhones, I think, continues to be sort of an undervalued, underappreciated place to look, I think.
I'm a big fan of the white wines of the Rhone, so would completely agree with that. You mentioned something interesting there about texture and weight and how that makes these wines very food friendly. And to what extent do you think it's important to be matching the wine closely with the food? Or actually at Christmas, is that something you can just throw out the window?
I think there's an argument for both, in all honesty. I think the food and wine matching purist would talk about matching weight. So if you're having a sort of full flavoured dish, you want a more full, robust wine. If you're having a dish that has lots of acidity, if you're having perhaps a tomato mozzarella salad at some point, I know it's not particularly Christmassy, but if you were having something which is sort of high acid, then something like a Riesling or a Chablis, etc., would work well. But equally, it also comes down to the flavours we enjoy. So I think in terms of what I serve with my food, it's a combination of the two, really. I'm trying to think about what's going to match the dish, but also there's just wines that I just really love and I just want to drink it. So if it's a treat, then I'll simply enjoy it as and when I want, really.
Quite right, too. I think we can agree Christmas is definitely a time for bringing out those special bottles. Amy, are there any bottles in your cellar, anything you've been keeping for just this occasion?
Well, my cellar's a little bit newer, just given I'm fairly new to the industry and a little bit more youthful perhaps than Martin here.
Thank you.
Sorry. but I would say that I picked up recently, I went to Italy in July, we visited Barolo and Barbaresco, and I picked up Grimaldi. Actually, it's 2016, so I think it perhaps is a little bit early to take it out of my cellar, but maybe I will, maybe it might be a little in a few more years, but that's something that I'm looking at with a bit of curiosity. I think their wines are absolutely beautiful. They have a lovely elegance, and I think Barolo is something that I'm definitely considering for Christmas dinner this year, just because of the newer styles, less of the traditional styles, but the newer styles I think have a beautiful kind of elegance and really nice fruit character. There's also, you've got sort of cranberries and those red fruits there that would pair really nicely with your Christmas dinner. You know, there's lots going on in a Christmas dinner. There's lots of sides. If you're in my house, there's about 10 different sides that you could be having. So there's lots going on, lots of kind of different things happening. So having a wine that maybe has a little bit of spice, some kind of, you know, real fruit core, to me is really important. So I haven't necessarily decided which one yet, but I think Barolo is definitely a contender this year.
So that's really interesting. So thinking a bit more about the reds, Barolo is often seen as a red wine that has to go with meat because of the tannins. So I'd love to hear some of the dishes that you pair Barolo with. I would completely agree that it's a wine that can be very, very versatile. And I think sometimes our listeners might be a little bit shy about pairing it with lighter dishes or vegetarian dishes. So Amy, tell us about some of the dishes you might be pairing your Barolo with.
So my Christmas dinner this year, I think, is probably going to be some kind of sort of pastry vol-au-vent, maybe with some butternut squash, some chickpeas, a little bit of spice, because vegetables do need a bit more help in that sense. It'll probably have some kind of dried fruits in there, some nuts, and I think the Barolo will go really nicely because it does have a wonderful complexity and lots of different layers. You know, when they're on the more elegant side, they do have really beautiful sort of fresh roses and things like that, and the cranberries, and it's just such a beautiful, pretty wine it can be. And then with a bit of age, you've also got really nice depth of concentration with animal-y notes to it and the deep spices, which I think will pair with my kind of vegetarian food at Christmas.
And Martin, do you tend to go for one flagship wine for your Christmas dinner, or would you rather have a selection on the table, both white and red? Tell us about your approach to choosing bottles.
I'll tend to have a mix, really, in honesty. Probably a couple of different whites, a couple of different reds. My family are sort of have increasingly become interested in wine as my career in wine has sort of extended, particularly my parents-in-law. You know, it's all about different flavours. And, you know, as we know with Christmas, a lot of people have turkey. Is it about the turkey? Perhaps to some extent, but it's also about the other flavours on the plate. So really strong flavours. You know, if you have a fantastic gravy, you've got pigs in blankets, you know, the bits that we really love on the edge of it, you know, the bacon and cabbage and cream sort of mix and the vegetables, etc. I think there's a lot of flavours there. And if I go to my personal taste, you know, I love Pinot Noir. My sort of principal passion in wine, I guess, is probably Burgundy, it's fair to say, both red and white. On the red side, I love Pinot because it can give you such beautiful, pure, defined red fruits. It is relatively low tannin in the scheme of red wine. So they can be very, very silky, very, very sort of cleansing because of the acidity. But as I said previously, I love Rioja as well. And why Rioja is a great choice for Christmas, just as it is for Easter or, you know, any real special occasion, is it's just so versatile that the tannins tend to be a lot softer than claret, for instance. And because a lot of Rioja is aged in American oak rather than French, you get a lot more of the oak-derived flavours, which in terms of American oak, you know, I sort of often talk about sort of Rioja spice. So it's cinnamon, it's clove, it's that sort of vanilla hint that you get from the oak. So sort of red and black fruit, but often more red than black in Rioja. Soft tannins, still reasonably full-bodied, not quite as much as a claret perhaps, but certainly much more full-bodied than a Burgundy. So I think it really does tick an awful lot of boxes as having all those secondary flavours which match with all sorts of different things across any number of things that could be on your plate. And obviously, you know, not everyone has turkey these days. A couple of Christmases ago, much to the despair of my parents, I insisted on doing a rib of beef. and again, you know, it's you know, fantastic in that instance.
My partner had a rack of lamb last year because he doesn't like, he's not veggie. So I cooked him a rack of lamb, and yeah, he was very thrilled with that. So something like a Rioja, I mean, that would be absolutely amazing.
I think more and more people are looking, you know, definitely, not feeling like they have to be constrained to turkey. I actually quite like a turkey. I sort of have a smoker, and when I do turkey, I do it outside, which sort of keeps me busy in the mornings, basically. It gives me a job to do because I don't really like sitting still on Christmas Day. So I do enjoy it, but yeah, sort of mixing up every few years with something else, be that beef, be that lamb, etc., is, I think, a duck, goose, etc., is a really good idea.
I think you guys have got me sold on the Rioja. Are there any particular producers that you're really excited by at the moment?
I mean, the headline ones, really, from my perspective, is the sort of traditional producers. So often they fall into two brackets: the producers who age their wines for extended periods, such as La Rioja Alta, Vinotondonia, Cune, give three examples, and others who make wines in a more modern way and age for a much shorter period in oak, people like Artardi, perhaps. I'm sort of in the camp of the old-fashioned traditional guys. So, for instance, we, you know, not too long ago, we were selling the 2010 Vinotondonia. So that sees about 5 or 6 years, perhaps, in barrel before then being matured in bottle for another 3 or 4 years and then being released to the market. So it's perfectly ready to go. You've got all the sort of secondary flavours beginning to come along. La Rioja Alta is a producer which, you know, a lot of our customers will be very, very familiar with. They make a range of wines, Vina Ardanza, 904, 890. We've sold an awful lot of it over the years because we've been very clear that it offers real quality to the price versus the price for our customers. So yeah, customers with sort of mature vintages of that in their cellars are in for a real treat. And if you bought bigger bottles, then all the better. You know, Rioja is one of those regions whereby you can find bigger bottles without paying a particular premium for them. So be it magnums or double magnums, they really make a statement on the table and are fantastic.
Are there any other advantages to magnums? They obviously look fantastic. They're quite heavy to pour. I mean, do they taste different? Is there any difference in how they age?
So there's definitely a viewpoint that the optimum optimum bottle size in terms of ability to age as Magnum. It's due to the ratio of air versus volume in the bottle. So that's, you know, certainly a consideration. But I mean, from my perspective, it really is kind of just about theatre, really. You know, Amy and I are very, very lucky in that we work in the wine trade and we come across big bottles all the time, and it's not a rarity to us. But for the majority of people, it kind of is. And a big bottle on the table is something which is basically just really, really good fun. People enjoy the theatre of it, the enjoyment of not maybe just having a single bottle, which by the time you spread it around four or six people means, you know, you can't really have more than a glass or so. So, yeah, I mean, I love double Magnum and upwards, because a double Magnum is 3 litres of wine. If you've got, you know, 8-10 people around a dinner table, maybe you have some left the next day, maybe you don't, but it's a real bit of theatre to put it in the middle of the table.
You mentioned both Pinot Noir and, of course, Chardonnay from Burgundy earlier. Martin, you're a big fan of Burgundy. Amy, a question for you. Do you think that Christmas is a time for bringing out your Grand Crus, your Premier Crus from Burgundy? Would you go for perhaps a village wine? Is there some advice you can give us there?
I think the best thing to do at Christmas is whatever you want. Christmas really is that time for celebration. And the most important thing for me is that everybody at my Christmas is drinking something they're actually enjoying. And that means for some people bringing out your best Premier Cru, your Grand Cru. And definitely for me, that would be something that I would be bringing out, you know, something with a lot of complexity. Well, you're talking about what you pair with Christmas dinner. And actually, because there's so much going on in a Christmas dinner, you do need a wine that can kind of live up to that. So having something with, you know, all these different characteristics is really, really important to me. But you're not always going to have everybody around at Christmas that likes those kinds of wines. So actually, I think there's definitely opportunity there to have village level wines for if your neighbours are calling round with, you know, their biscuits that they've baked for you or something, or, you know, you've got people stopping by that you don't necessarily want to open a kind of £100-£200 bottle of wine, but actually you want something that's really, really lovely. And there's definitely wines to be had, you know, in Burgundy. Producers like Merlin, who, you know, he makes our very own wine. So that for me is something that I will definitely stock up on, a case or two of that, because it's fun, it's delicious, and it's not, you know, necessarily your best wine ever, but it's definitely something for the festive period.
I love the idea of your neighbours stopping round with baked biscuits. Fantastic.
Also, you can guarantee you're always going to have that one person that gives you a gift that you haven't necessarily got them a gift, and the kind of panic and having a few cases of something in the back of the cupboard is definitely worth doing.
I think that's very fair. Sometimes we can get sidetracked thinking about wines for the day itself.
Yeah.
And actually there are so many occasions around Christmas in the run-up, in that wonderful time between Christmas and New Year. I believe it's called Betwixtmas.
I love that term.
All of those occasions when you may well need a few bottles of something stashed away. Martin, are there any particular vintages which are tasting really, really good at the moment that you think actually now is a great time to take them out of your cellar and enjoy those wines at their peak?
So if we start with whites, I think in terms of what our customers have got in their cellars, I think there's probably a pretty high ratio of Burgundy in all honesty, and, you know, be that from the Côte d'Or or be that from Chablis. We've had a succession of pretty warm vintages in recent years, which is great because it means that they're drinking well relatively in their relative youth, I guess. In terms of recent vintages, you know, if anyone has any 2014s in their cellar, you know, one of the absolute great Burgundy vintages, beginning to drink absolutely beautifully now, no immediate hurry, but absolutely lovely. Anything beyond 2014 really is sort of in its absolute prime now. And looking more recently, 2015 is a hot vintage. Therefore, you get lovely sort of ripe baked apple sort of fruit, pear, not tropical, but on the sunnier side, I guess, if you think of sort of sunny fruit. So 15's absolutely good to go across all levels now, be that Bourgogne Blanc, be that Village Premier Cru, even up to Grand Cru. 2016 similar. 2016 maybe a little bit more freshness, but similarly warm. 2017 similar to 14, a sort of a fresher, real sort of classic vintage. 18s are drinking beautifully as well now because it's a warm year. So there's a lot of vintages that are drinking well out there now, but I'd say particularly 2014 to 2018, all within that bracket, are in many cases working very very, very well indeed. If we look to Chablis, I always think that Chablis just needs maybe a little bit more time than people tend to give it. If you're looking from 2018 and further back, then they're going to be absolutely, absolutely beautiful now. On the red side, and a word to Bordeaux, because we haven't said much about Bordeaux at the moment.
How could we have Christmas without Bordeaux?
Exactly.
You know, I'll be talking about my passions being Rioja and Burgundy, but I do have a lot of Bordeaux in my cellar as well. It's hard not to be tempted over the years. I think that, again, a lot of claret, people talk about that sort of 10 years to rest before you enjoy them. My favourite vintages, and maybe some of the sort of what others might consider to be the lesser years, sort of the more medium-bodied vintages like 01 and 04, 07 is sort of considered by many to be a sort of a weak year, but I've actually had some really good 07s recently. Some 2014s are beginning to drink pretty well, so you don't always have to wait sort of that 10-year period. But certainly, you know, the wines that I get particularly excited about from Bordeaux are the mature examples when you have probably on average sort of 10 plus years, and then you get all those sort of lovely sort of meaty, tapenade sort of, you know, cigar box sort of secondary flavours coming through.
And of course, then the tannins are a little bit softer, makes them a touch more food friendly as well, actually more versatile.
Yeah, mature Bordeaux is exactly that. They become a lot more approachable and you get a lot more of the sort of secondary flavours, which is what makes claret so special.
Something we haven't touched on yet, of course, in food is cheese. So, Amy, Martin, what is your view on wine and cheese? Should we stick with the red wine? Do we go back to white wine? Do you have a particular go-to wine that you always bring out for the cheese board?
I'm a white cheese guy. and I guess I'm also slightly picky about my cheese. I'm not sort of a blue cheese sort of a person. I love hard cheeses. I love things like Comté, Gruyère, etc. Yeah. And I love a Poisse. And for those, you know, I can think of nothing better than a white Burgundy in general. So something like a Chassin perhaps, which is going to have a lovely sort of freshening acidity, lovely sort of floral sort of white flowery notes. That would be my pick. I think that red wine at the end of the meal, I don't know, I'm sort of ready to freshen things up a little bit, to be honest. I've had my fill of red and I just want a bit of a freshener.
Yeah, it can be as well, you know, like you said, it's that moment where you're kind of quite full, but you're sort of powering through because the cheese board, I'm the same as you, Barbara, is the best bit. So yeah, it's something where you do need to have something a little bit fresher. And I think the acidity you get with whites particularly is just, it cuts through kind of all that heaviness that you get with
definitely.
Cheese. And cheese, you know, it is rich. So having something that's kind of bright and exciting is really important.
And Boxing Day leftovers, do you have a go-to wine for that?
I think that's the point at which you open up the single most exciting thing you have. You don't worry about food and wine matching. There's so much different food, you know, a lot of people I assume do what my family do, which is you have just, you know, the world's greatest buffet with additional pile of freshly done roast potatoes and everything else. So you've got so many flavors to enjoy and so many additional things. And obviously, you know, everyone has their own traditions in their family. So yeah, that's the point at which I will make sure I have a bottle or two of something which is simply my favorite thing to drink, I guess.
That's brilliant advice. I love that.
I think on Christmas Day, I'd probably have opened up lots of different... I do tend to open up lots of different wines because you've got so many different people there. Everybody's got different taste. And why not, really? Why can't you open up, you know, lots more than you would normally?
We have spoken about wines that we enjoy drinking at Christmas, but of course, wine makes a wonderful gift. Amy, is there a particular special bottle on your gift list this Christmas?
Yes, I mean, as you can as our listeners can imagine, working here, the list gets very, very long of the wines you like. I definitely like to have some wines from Evan Sardi because they are just phenomenal. He visited us in the summer and it was the fullest tasting room we've had for a tutorial like that because he's just a real rock star and creating just fantastic wines and really kind of representing the terroir in South Africa. So that's definitely up there on my list. I think Gioconda is another one. Their Beechworth Estate Winery is, they've that kind of wine that they produce is amazing. The Chardonnay, and that's something that's on my list. I've pulled out the 20. 2013 vintage for a couple of events recently, and it really challenged the Burgundy on the table because it went down so well. So that's definitely up there, but again, kind of hard to find. And then I think for me, Luigi Giordano is a wine that is a producer that I would love to see in my under my Christmas tree. His wines are just amazing. Their Barbarescos are incredibly kind of floral and elegant and just really interesting. The 2019 showed really well when we were in Italy in the summer, so that's definitely on my Christmas list. Yes,
delicious. I think that's an appropriate
as well.
List. Martin, what will you be asking for when you write to Santa this year?
Well, the things I've spotted sale at the moment I'm particularly excited about, there are some mature vintages of Frederick Emile, which is a special cuvee from Trimbach, which is a fantastic Riesling. There are some very attractive Magnums I've spotted. There's some 2000 vintage Grod La Rose, I think, which is a real sort of standout Saint-Julien for me. Obviously, you know, great vintage, just absolutely perfect now in terms of its sort of level of maturity, you know, enjoy now and over the coming sort of 5 or 10 years, but there's no point in waiting. That's absolutely prime. I think any sort of Rioja with lots of age. Again, one of the charms of Rioja is the fact that it can age far longer than many of us sort of let it anyway. So, you know, lots of wines from the 70s and 80s from the producers I've mentioned previously, which are absolutely glorious. So lots and lots, really. There'll be all sorts of things on my Christmas list. And I think that what I'd say is that we at Berries, we in recent times, we really go out of our way to build the range so that it sort of crescendos around the Christmas period, whereby we have a greater selection of mature wines than we've had in the past. Myself and my colleagues put a lot of effort to try and make sure that there are options at different price levels and different regions, etc., with maturity. So please do have a chat with your account manager and have a good browse of the site. There are some wines on there that will really sort of surprise and excite, I think.
Fantastic. Well, I have my fingers crossed for both of you that Santa comes through on those lists. It's been wonderful chatting with you both today. I think all that remains for me to say is, Amy, Martin, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge with me, your stories in such wonderful surroundings. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Drinking Well, podcast by Berry Brothers and Rudd. If you'd like to browse the producers mentioned in today's podcast and see what wines we have available, visit bbr.com/podcast. Or if you're interested in starting a fine wine collection with Berry Brothers and Rudd, all the information you need can be found on bbr.com/collecting. If you've enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. We hope to welcome you back soon, but until then, thank you again for listening to this episode of Drinking Well.